Hi, Mark. Thanks for being in the studio.
Good morning, Rod. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Now, some people might look at a swamp and see a void of cold, wet marsh taking up potentially available productive land. When you look at a swamp, what do you see?
Oh, I see an environment teeming with life and lots of interesting things going on. Also some things going on perhaps that those people who are interested in production, it's worth stopping to think about as well, because often our swamps are the places where we're getting recharged to our aquifers that lie under the regions. There's what you see going on in front of you that's very obvious and very special places to be when they're full of water, but they're also contributing to a bigger picture as well, which I think there's not too many people around that, particularly with stories of drought elsewhere in Australia, that don't think about water in this country. Very important environments.
Particularly in the southeast of South Australia, the water table comes up constantly in conversation.
That's right.
Would the water table recharge without swamps?
Much more difficult. So that interaction between what's going on at the surface level and what's going on underground in this region is crucial. If you stop and think about the region as you drive around, say from down at the very corner of our state, we've got the Glenelg River, which our organisation is named after. And if you travel all the way around the coastal zone, think about how many natural creeks and rivers you see between the Glenelg and the Murray River. There's not many. And the reason for that is that it's very flat in the southeast, and that underlying limestone means that, yes, the natural condition of the southeast was lots of broad flats and swamps, very slow-moving water, and a ample opportunity for that water to percolate into the ground and to recharge the unconfined tertiary limestone aquifer that sits under the region and that we all rely on some shape or form, whether it's being drawn out of the Blue Lake in Mount Gambier or Bores around here. I guess our wetlands, the way I see them in that area as you travel through, they do provide a bit of a window on the aquifer in places. There's large areas of the southeast where the water you see expressed at the surface is actually dependent on that groundwater being at or near the surface. Some other areas, not so much. The wetlands might be lined with clay and just get wet from rainfall. But the change in water tables in parts of the region where we've had obviously major changes since settlement, that drive now from here to Adelaide, you cross big drains now, which take a lot of water off the land. There's been major changes to the landscape with plantation forestry establishment. So yes, there are parts of the region where water tables have dropped significantly, and that interaction between the water table and the surface doesn't happen anymore. So we've lost a lot of wetlands in the southeast.
I was driving up to Panola during the week. I noticed swamps where I haven't noticed them before and water lying around. What sort of a season are we having?
Well, after what felt like a very dry and hot summer and autumn, we've had 3 wet months in a row, which is what it really takes to get things going after a dry spell. So that for the first couple of months, so I think in Mount Gambier it's been close to, if not quite 100 mils, I think 2 of the 3 last months have been over 100 mils and 1 got close. So that month on month, having rainfall back up like that is, you know, the first couple of months the rain just recharging the soil profile. Now we're getting to the point that you put a third and fourth wet month on top of that and we really start to see water lying around the landscape in places that we haven't been seeing it as much of, because we haven't been, if you look at the rainfall records, yeah, we haven't been having those chains of wet months in a row many years over the last 20 years. It's why we've found a receptive audience with some of the wetland restoration work we do, because I think people do value swamps, and particularly we're finding a lot of farmers are willing to work with us. I think most people realise deep down that we might have pushed the balance a bit too far in one direction, and we're certainly not suggesting that we should try and fix every swamp that's been drained in the southeast or western Victoria, but you know, there's a few out there that probably justifies having a closer look at them. And over the last 6 or 7 years, we've now restored over 40 wetlands in the region, various sizes, most of them on private land, and we're going about that business quietly. Also working with our plantation forestry companies who have some really important wetlands in their estates as well. And in a rare number of cases, we've also been restoring some wetlands on public land. And in a couple of cases, we've also chosen to purchase areas to restore the wetlands on them ourselves.
40 wetlands, yeah. I mean, your organisation is spending a lot of time, money and effort rehabilitating old swamps. Can I play devil's advocate here? Why is it important to rehabilitate these areas when there are so many other swamps around?
Yeah, look, I suppose we use a few criteria to, when we're working through where should we put our discretionary effort, you know, what areas make sense to restore. Yeah, understanding what the characteristics of a site are like. We like looking into the history of them to work out when they were changed, how they were changed, understand the catchment that they sit within. Some areas, the catchment may have changed such that there's not enough water there anymore, for instance. So you have a look at all of these factors. Most importantly of all, is the landowner or the land manager willing to work with us to that outcome? And if all those things line up, then we'll go about either trialling a solution or getting in there and doing some earthworks to correct those changes. And, you know, why would people choose to do that? Well, some of it's just basic aesthetics. I mean, if you're out on the land every day, as many of our farmers across the region are, and you've got that swampy corner that granddad drained, you know, all those years ago, and you don't have anywhere to take your kids for a paddle in a kayak or to go hunting for frogs, or you just want, you know, that area may not be the most productive of your farm and you might just want to have that experience of going past an area of open water again. I mean, it actually feels good to see reflections off water. And so aesthetically, there are probably some almost intangible values that people derive from being around water bodies and wetlands. But then there's also the environmental, and these are the things, I guess, that we really focus on, measuring the changes that can happen in a wetland when you restore it. And the birds come back. They're amazing. They know where water is in the landscape somehow. The swans will turn up and start trying to nest. And depending on how connected that area is with others, the frogs generally find their way back. Sometimes fish turn up, depending on if it's connected to other waterways. And the plant life comes back. And that can be enhanced potentially by the way stock are managed. We've restored wetlands in some cases where stock still have access to the wetlands because the water is the main thing we're working on. Some sites really do benefit from removal of stock or just partial controlling the way stock accesses. So you might just use it for summer grazing rather than year-round. Give the wetland a chance to do its thing, and as it dries down, have some late pick, which is where sometimes restoring wetlands actually has a production benefit if your farm's been overdrained and you don't have any green pick in the summer. So it's a complex story, and there's lots of different angles to it. It shapes the conversation we have with people. Mm. Depending on what they value, we can talk through it in ways that will make sense to them.
So how do you go about rehabilitating a swamp, Mark? I mean, does the amount of work that was put in to initially drain the swamp, is that same amount of work required to reinstate the swamp?
That's a really great question, and one of the reasons why we're so excited about working with water and wetlands, because unlike a lot of the work, and really good work that's getting done to better manage our environment, a lot of other activities that we do require a lot of, not only a lot of upfront effort, but a lot of ongoing effort. And in the case of planting trees, for instance, some of those efforts won't bear fruit for a long time if you're trying to recreate a fully functioning ecosystem, say trees with hollows. You know, this is something that takes a long time. Now, wetlands, on the other hand, what we've discovered through doing this work and measuring the response that we get, we can make a change in year one, and people will come out and see the swamp in year two and three and say, this place looks amazing. I assume it's been here for years. You know, the response that we get from plants and then the animals that return, it can actually be really rapid. And if you stop and think about what wetlands are and how they function, it actually makes sense, which is that a picture of a floodplain of a river, for instance, it might only inundate once every few years or once a year seasonally. The plants that are in that environment and need to be able to react to the water arriving, they have the capacity through their seed or their roots to be able to bunker down when times aren't good. And when times are good, they can spring to life. And that very same process that wetland species need to be able to take advantage of, we can then capitalise on when we restore a wetland. So when we put the plug in or restore the what we call the sill level or the maximum retention height for water of a swamp, we can trigger that process for whatever's left in that system. Now, if it's been drained for a long time, then the amount of residual seed bank in the swamp will be reduced. If it's been cropped, that will have depleted that seed bank further. But even in those situations, it's amazing what comes back. And even in situations where they're not right there now, they've done studies on what ducks bring in on their feet. And, you know, there are other means by which plants will, oh, that wasn't there last year. Where's that come from? And then it'll be in a patch and then you'll see it radiating out. Nature's an amazing thing. And water is, you know, stating the obvious, but water is one of those ingredients that is so fundamental to life that when you put the water back in a place with the right attributes and the right conditions, yeah, we see some. It's the thing that keeps me excited about working with wetlands, actually, the fact that we can trigger that response. And that response is self-sustaining. So if we know we've picked a site in the catchment that's still got a water supply that's secure, we've talked to the people to get them on board and, yep, they're keen to go ahead. We do the works and we're just at the top of the mountain pushing the snowball off, and off nature goes. Every year that site will continue to receive the water, and we just see sites getting better and better with time without us having to do lots of follow-up intervention. There's more work to be done around the wetland edge that doesn't inundate because we often have a weedy zone which isn't being inundated, but in the water itself, that area we get spontaneous recovery and it's great to watch. People will be familiar with Picaninny Ponds. There's a wetland that's been reinstated next door to that called Pick Swamp. Triglochin, or a plant called water ribbons, started emerging all over the place. And because the inundation was deep enough, it It took out all the pasture species that had been sown, and it was the first of many native plants that then started to re-emerge in the water, and then the birds came back, and now it's a fantastic bird-watching site, and our local bird-watching group, BirdLife Southeast SA, do regular monitoring down there, and they're now up to, I think, over 180 species of birds have been recorded in that new addition to the reserve. It's now part of Picaninny Ponds Conservation Park, and it's now a hotspot for a really cryptic species called the Australasian bittern, which is a type of bird that people call the bunyip bird. Makes quite a the males make an unusual booming sound. They've turned up and said, we really like this habitat. But there's threatened fish in that environment down there as well, whole host of other things that are going on. So 10 years down the track, looking at that area, if you went there, you would say, this has been like this forever, right? You wouldn't know that it was a site that was only restored 10 years ago. But interestingly, and this is the thing that I find really fascinating about restoring wetlands and talking people through what to expect, we'll study the old maps, and I studied the old maps for down there at Pick Swamp, and it was a dense tea tree covered peat swamp, like the area in the park next door is, but through the process of it being drained and developed for 35 years, the peat sunk, which is what it does. As soon as you drain peat, it's very aerated, it's completely organic, so it starts oxidising, it gets trampled, you have this process of collapse and subsidence that begins. Now that means that we can put the water back roughly at the same level it was prior to drainage, and all of a sudden the peat isn't at the surface anymore, and you haven't just resaturated the peat, we've actually inundated it. So Pick Swamp's interesting in that it doesn't look anything like what it looked like 50 years ago, but it's a really good wetland still. It's got more open water, it's, you know, fully functioning ecosystem, but in that case, restoration hasn't meant putting it back instantly like it was. That process now will take probably hundreds of years, because if you think about how peat swamp forms, it might start as open water, those plants that are growing in it, they all collapse into the water and they don't fully decompose because they're underwater, and that sediment building up gradually reaches the surface, and that's when it turns into a tea tree swamp. That's the climax state for that area. Stick around, because it's going to take a long time to get back to that state, but there are areas of tea tree down there, and that are still part of that environment, and it's a great diverse wetland area now.
Are you looking for more areas to rehabilitate?
We're always on the lookout. Our preferred option is to work with people on their land, and there's a few cases too where we're also working with public land managers on their land, but particularly farmers. We're a not-for-profit charitable organisation. Our aim, if people are keen to work with us, is we'll try and find resources to work with you so that it doesn't cost you anything if we possibly can. You know, that's the aim. So that's our preferred option, but then we also always have the eye out for those sites that maybe it's just not going to be viable for the person who owns it to restore, but it might be in a really important location and there may be no other pathway to see that area protected than for us to try and step in and raise the funds to secure it, to then restore it. And we're doing that at the moment for a site in the southern Grampians, actually, just over the border near Dunkeld, a place called Walker Swamp. Significant area, 1,000 acres of floodplain. It's split into two stages. Stage one is all paid for and we're underway with works out there, and we're currently fundraising to try and make sure that we don't have to carry any debt on securing the second area, which allows us to reinstate this area of 1,000 acres literally next door to the Grampians National Park and two other swamps that we've restored over the last few years called Brady Swamp and Gooseneck Swamp. So that network effect of wetlands that we've talked about, we can really build on that in that area, and we're expecting that place is going to boom to life. It's going to be very exciting and over a big scale. So when you're out there, it's, you know, you really get a sense of what this floodplain is currently like, but in the future, you know, what it can be when there's a whole network and a chain of swamps, really diverse, different range of habitats. Yeah, the birds will be happy out there. In the southeast, we've lost over 90% of our wetlands. In Western Victoria, it's over 60%. If we can just tweak that by even a couple of percent, that's going to make a huge difference. We have to eat and we have to have production in the landscape. So no one's, we're very realistic about that. It's just finding those places where it does make sense, and maybe we can just nudge the balance back the other way a little bit. The other thing, if you don't mind me saying, when I worked for the department, getting that project off the ground, I got funding to initiate the project, and we had funding to put a project officer on, and back in 2006, a fellow who many people will know, Steve Clark, who came to work for the department at the time and has been instrumental in that whole project over the last decade, and as a, you know, really lovely fellow, unfortunately he passed away just this week. Given that you've asked the question, we're talking about that area, I think it's appropriate to let you know, and you know, that it's a really sad week for our wetlands in the region, because Steve's someone who was a passionate advocate for wetlands and really connected with so many people through his work there and at other sites in the region, and we've lost a real champion for our environment, and really feeling for his family at the moment.
More information from where, Mark?
If people are interested in what we do, they can just visit our website, which is ngt.org.au, short for Nature Glenelg Trust. And yeah, look, there's links there too if people are keen and would like to donate to the current fundraiser at Walker Swamp. We'd love to have your support. That will also get you your invitation to come out there and see the site next month on World Rivers Day, which is Sunday the 23rd of September. We'd love to have lots of people along, and we're just asking that people make a small contribution as their way of putting themselves on the invite list. And look, we have a newsletter that people can sign up to as well. If they go to the website, they'll see a spot there. And look, I know it's a little bit of a drive for people who might be based in the southeast, but on the evening of the 21st of August, I'm giving a presentation in Dunkeld at the community centre there. So if people are interested to hear about some of the work we're doing in that neighbourhood, lots of before and after images of exactly what wetland restoration involves. It's one of the great tools for us communicating that, actually, is those before and after shots really do highlight exactly what happens when you push that snowball off the top of the hill and get that self-sustaining process of recovery underway.
Mark, it's been great to have you in the studio, and thank you very much for the catch-up.
Lovely to talk to you. Thanks so much, Rod.